From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on a quiet street in the suburbs when an 11-year-old girl named Georgie faced a dilemma. Her mother and stepfather were out to dinner, and she desperately wanted to connect with her older stepsister named Tangi, but Tangi wasn't interested. She kept to herself, kept her bedroom door closed, the music loud, didn't want to talk or play or hang out. She did her own thing. But now Georgie saw that Tangi was breaking her father's rule. Tangi's boyfriend had snuck over to visit, and they were kissing on the front porch. Her boyfriend wanted Tangi to leave the house. Georgie was hearing things she knew she shouldn't be hearing, and maybe she thought she could somehow let Tangi know that she knew her secrets, and she would never tell, that they could become friends. Maybe that would be the way to win over her new stepsister. But what if Tangi was about to run off? Could Georgie keep that a secret? Blended families have a wide range of experiences, but it can be a struggle. Georgie's at the center of a new novel called Love Like Sky, a book about her desire to heal what seems broken around her, to love and to be loved, to help her family, to help save her sister, and connect with her stepsister. The author, Leslie Youngblood, is an award-winning Rochesterian, and this is her first novel. It's aimed at young adult readers, but it's really a book for everyone. It's in bookstores now, and the cover will grab you. I was in a Barnes & Noble, and I saw people literally just marveling at the cover. In fact, one of the Barnes & Noble employees was remarkable on it. So it looks great. The book is Love Like Sky. Leslie, welcome back to Connections. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Evan. I'm happy to be here.
How long was this book in the making?
Love Like Sky, approximately 2 years. But I would say longer than that because the characters have been mulling around with me for more than 10 years.
Wow. Wow. The cover itself, we're going to get into the story in a second, but I was in the Pittsburgh Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
And one of the employees was stacking these books.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Doesn't this look great?" I said, "Leslie's going to be on the program coming up." This is almost a month ago, I think, when it was just hitting the shelves. So tell me about how you created this gorgeous cover, because that's G-Baby on the cover, right?
That's G-Baby on the cover, Georgie. And this is the wonderful illustration of Vassdy Harrison. She has a book out called Little Leaders, Bold Women in African-American History. So Disney did commission her to do the work. Now, I loved it. Now, but there's a little backstory to the cover, so let me know if you want me to go
into
that.
Yeah, please do.
Well, I landed my deal with Disney, and the first illustration that they sent, the first cover they sent, was a big heart with a little girl underneath that didn't quite look like the girl I have on the cover now. And marketing was convinced that the big heart with Love Like Sky would grab people. And since it was Disney, I was thinking, well, maybe I just have to go with what they say. You know, I'm new, a debut artist or author. But something said, "Leslie, you don't love this cover. You love the book, but you don't love this cover." So I spoke up to my editor. She gave me pushback at first because it had already been tested through marketing. And I said, this is not the cover for it. So eventually, she's a great editor, and she sided with me. She said, "Okay, I'm going to send you everything that Vashti Harrison sent us." And she did, and it was amazing. There was like 40 other examples of illustrations, and that one jumped out. And from there, I added the shorts and the little earrings.
And the shorts and the earrings, and then the shadow, Georgie's shadow. Tell us about the
shadow.
Right,
the shadow, that's all of the illustrator's creations. And it just, some people don't notice it at first, but it just shows that there's Georgie, but she's always connected to Tangi and, of course, her baby sister, Peaches.
Her baby sister, Peaches.
Yes.
It's a beautiful cover. It will
Thank
grab
you
when you see it in stores. Love Like Sky is out now. Who did you write the book for? Who do you want to read this book? I mean, the obvious answer is everybody.
Everyone in the world. Outside of that, Evan, I would say really students, maybe younger people who are products of blended families or who currently have been put in a blended family and don't quite know how to cope. And also, I think I had adults in mind as well, because mm-hmm. adults, we need families to understand that even though they may have difficulties working together, at the end of the day, it should be about the kids. So mostly just for kids dealing with blended families, but also for these parents that are looking for a way in.
I also want to say, and I don't know if I'm sort of stepping into territory that's outside of the bounds of where I'm I don't know if I'm out of, you know, sort of my proverbial lane here, but
well, let's see.
I think it is awesome to see a young black girl on the cover of a book like
this.
Oh,
that's not outside the lane at all. That's the lane that I wish more people would get into. And this is the thing, it is a book that I believe that a young black girl could look and say, hey, that looks like me. That looks like my sister. That looks like a friend of mine. And I love that accessibility to love like sky through the cover. And that's important. It really is.
Well, and I also wonder for you as an author, I'm going to try to phrase this in a way that is thoughtful, doesn't miss the mark here. Look, this is your debut novel.
Yes.
You've got a young black girl on the cover.
Yes.
This book will succeed if the reading audience says this was a book for everybody.
Right.
It will do less of a successful number for you if people think, well, this is a book for
black girls. Right.
Black families.
That's true. And I suppose when I thought about the marketing's aspect or marketing's ideal to put the heart and not make the black girl the center, maybe that was their idea, or maybe that was their thinking as well. Having this black girl on the cover may diminish sales. It may make people think this is a black novel. This is only for black girls. And that's a problem. But I do believe that that was a chance that I personally was willing to take to really believe that, one, I do want black girls to gravitate toward. I do want their parents to gravitate toward. But I do want people to know that it's a universal story. And
the
problems that little black girls have in blended families are the same that white girls and other people of color have. So that is universal.
No doubt about it. I just want to say, as we kind of get into the themes of the book, producer Megan Mack was the first to tell me, because she read the book before I got to it, how outstanding the book was.
Thank you.
From the prose to the story itself, she just had such high praise, and I came to see why. I promised our listeners you will not be disappointed. I'm not an endorser. I'm not a paid endorser of Leslie Youngblood. The book is just outstanding, and it grabs you right away. It's it takes you into G Baby and Peaches' life. Why don't you tell the listeners who G Baby and Peaches are?
Well, they definitely are products of the blended, of their parents' divorce first, I would say, and they're really trying to understand their new surroundings, having a 15-year-old stepsister with a dad living away, and they currently live with the mom and their new stepdad, Frank. So they're adjusting to that, but while they're adjusting to that, they wonder, how does love change? How does, now that daddy isn't with us every day, how would his love change? Would his love lessen if we're not interacting with him every day? And then understand, they know that the stepmother, when he is involved in trying to make a family with her, would that take away some of the love that he has for his kids? And I think that that is their concern and their fear. And I think that's at the core of the novel.
That is, I guess I kind of want to warn readers, anybody who's been through a family with parents who split up or went through different sort of blendings of families, it's probably going to call back some feelings you have, because there's some universal things here. And it can be emotional if you've gone through that, because these are kids, 11 and 6 years old are the sisters.
Yes.
And their stepsister, 15,
really
doesn't want any part of them, views them as an obligation, sort of an annoyance.
Exactly, babysitting obligation.
But it turns out, of course, she's gone through her own trauma, the 15-year-old, as we'll talk about here. And you've got this 11-year-old girl at the center of the story. She wants her sister to be happy. She wants her stepsister to like her, to love her. She wants her mom and dad to love them, and she wants her 6-year-old sister to understand that love isn't going to end. I mean, kids will have those questions, especially if parents split up. And there's a moment in the book early on where Peaches is wondering, when's the last time we heard from dad? And Georgie's saying, well, it was a couple of days ago. And Peaches is like, I counted backwards. It's 8 days. He hasn't called in 8 days.
8 days. And that's a lifetime to a kid when they're dealing with that.
Absolutely. You're a young child and you haven't heard from your father in more than a week. And she's asking her sister, Does he love us less? Does he still love us? You know, that cuts, that hurts. But I imagine that a lot of your readers are going to feel that, will experience that. What do you, are you aware of that when you're writing that? I mean, are you drawing on any of your own experiences?
Well, what I'm drawing on at that point is connecting with that 11-year-old and that 6-year-old and trying to make those emotions, I guess trying to express those emotions in a way that someone who is feeling that, who can express it, says, this is how I feel. Maybe if someone reads this, they would understand how I feel. So that's my job as a writer, is not to say everything that most people can articulate, but try to get to that feeling, that emotion that maybe a 6-year-old, an 11-year-old girl can't articulate. And hopefully a parent would read that. And Evan, that's a conversation starter. That is a place where parents, guardians, teachers can enter this story and help. Help heal, help understand, and just help a young girl with expression, which is first and foremost my job as a writer.
Can I read a little bit from
the
conversation with Peaches and G-Baby?
Please do.
So again, G-Baby is Georgie, the 11-year-old. Peaches is Patricia. I'm sorry, is that right? I always forget Peaches.
I mean, it gets confusing. Georgie is G-Baby,
yep.
And that's actually short for George's baby, her dad's baby, or
yep.
Grandma's baby,
yep.
Depending on who you ask. And then there's Peaches, and her full name is Patrice.
Patrice. And,
yes.
And so the 6-year-old is, this is her asking her sister mm-hmm. about dad's love. And I'll read now from the book. She took a deep breath. What if he runs out of love? You know, give it all away to their stepmom, and
mm-hmm.
don't have none left for us. That won't happen, Peaches. How you know? 'Cause love don't run out like that. Like what? Like gasoline. Love ain't like that. How is it then? She asked, turning on her stomach to face me. I've been working on that question since she asked me the first time, and I was still tuning up my answer. Well, Peaches nudged, it's like sky. If you keep driving and driving, gas will run out, right? That's why we got to go to the gas station. She flung her covers back and jumped into my bed. Yep, but have you ever seen the sky run out, no matter how far we go? No, she said. When we look up, there it is. Well, I told her, that's the kind of love Daddy and Mama have for us, Peaches. Love like sky. It never ends. Never. So Love Like Sky is the name of the book. And when I read that line, you know, it connects right to the title. And I thought, is that your phrase? Where did that come from?
That is the phrase that for every writer, I wish them that moment. That when you write a phrase, when you write dialogue, it's just that stream of consciousness that after when you finish, you say, that's it. And you never look back. And it doesn't happen all the time. And I was fortunate and blessed that when it happened, I knew immediately that was it. That was the name of the novel. And it also just put me into the story and helped me finish the entire story.
What an awesome moment to have as a writer.
It was amazing. And I literally felt, you know, not to get too corny here, Evan, but that's one of those moments where I felt that title so deeply, and having recently, at that point, lost a sibling, I just really felt a connection there, that you can't emulate that, you can't make that, you know, you can't make it happen. It's organic, but when it happens, and I wish it for every writer, you know it.
Can I ask you to take us into the writer's workshop a bit?
Okay, sure.
Because you're an award-winning writer yourself. This
yes.
is your first novel, but this is hardly your first go at writing.
So. No, definitely not.
So for writers who want to find that moment, want to turn a phrase, want to come up with a title, want to create a line of dialogue that's going to be sort of iconic, can you sit down and say, I'm going to do that now, or does it have to sort of flow out organically, and then when it hits you, it hits you?
I am a firm believer it has to be organic. I did not sit down and say, now I'm going to write a title and it's going to be great. Because I did have a working title before then. I cannot remember what it was, honestly. But I believe to make it real, to make it just something that you connect with personally, which is first and foremost what I had to do. And I had to be honest, and I had to feel the emotion. Honest, when I wrote this, I'm in tears. I'm hearing the voices of these characters and trying to explain it to the best of my ability with my characters. And I couldn't orchestrate that other than to tell a writer to just write. I don't know how many lines before that, you know, I had written, but you know it when you know it. And it's that simple and that hard at the same time.
My guest is Leslie Youngblood, the author of Love Like Sky. The book is out now. By the way, where can people get the book?
Barnes & Noble, in great distribution from my publisher. It's at Barnes & Noble nationwide, and also Amazon.com, and so those are the main, and hopefully independent bookstores have it as well, but that's a case-by-case basis.
Okay, and are you online? Website you want people to check out?
LeslieCYoungblood.com. There's, LeslieCYoungblood.com has the icons to purchase. Amazon.com and all Barnes & Noble stores have it.
I just bring up, if you're still thinking about a book under a Christmas tree, one of our favorite conversations of the season, Leslie, was last week we were talking about holiday gift giving, and one of our guests was talking about how their family does, a child in their family gets four gifts, mm-hmm. something they want, something they need, something to wear, something to read every
wow.
year.
I love that.
I always like something to read under mm-hmm. a Christmas tree.
I do too.
So what is the appropriate starting age? Love Like Sky is a book that, you know, people read at different levels. I understand that, and kids
right.
develop differently. But generally speaking, you know, this might be appropriate starting around what age, you think?
It is in the middle grade. Section. So it is 8 to 14 is the target audience for middle grade. Of course, as we were saying, that could vary some, and definitely adults, I would encourage them to read it as well. But the target age is 8 to 14 years old.
So let's get back into the characters of Love Like Sky. And the reason I'm going to walk you through this, I'm not going to tell you about how the whole book goes, but I think there are interesting themes. So we've been talking about blended families, mm-hmm. kids' desire to be loved, kids' fear that a parent might not love them, what kids do to try to make sure they are feeling that love, and sometimes what they try to do regarding their parents.
Right.
There are some other interesting themes I want to hit, too. So their 15-year-old stepsister has a boyfriend who's older.
He's a little older.
And he's kind of in the protest movement.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was really, to your credit right away, was you didn't, even though she's, you know, her parents are out at dinner and she's supposed to be in charge of the house, but she's sneaking out in the front porch and her boyfriend's sneaking by. You know, he's not a villain. I mean, he's not this,
no.
like this character who's trying to take advantage of a 15-year-old. She admires him
mm-hmm.
because of some of the work that he's doing. Tell us about that.
Right. He is working, and it wouldn't be quote unquote a Black Lives Matter, but something similar to that. And he's a freshman in college, so the age difference isn't that huge, mm-hmm. or 3 years, but to a parent, of course, that's a million years at that age. And he is working. He is set in Atlanta, Georgia, and he is working, dealing with some infractions that have happened on campus. And so he's concerned about that, and he wants to lead, and he wants Tangi involved as well, but he's not forcing her. He wants her to be involved because she wants to be involved. But she does admire him for the work that he is doing, and that was important to me to place in the novel.
How much as an author do you want those themes to be sort of either pervasive in a book like this, or how much do you want readers to take from that? How much are you trying to say about what you're observing about the country right now?
You know, I know that there is sometimes authors can get in their own way, and I didn't want to do that, but I have to be in the environment that I place my characters in. I cannot imagine not having that at the not necessarily the forefront, but definitely at the background with the Black Lives Matter movement, with what I believe honestly these characters would experience, and even G-Baby at her age being aware, because it's all around. It was important for me to mention names like Trayvon Martin to make sure that even though his name is mentioned once or twice in the story, that I believe that my characters would know who Trayvon Martin was, what happened to him. So I think it's the landscape, not only the landscape of the world we live in, but it was important for it to be in the setting of my novel.
Do publishers push you at all with stuff like that, either for or against? Do they offer feedback on those kind of themes?
I don't think they push. Well, let me just speak for my publisher.
Sure.
I was concerned because it is Disney, and people had all kind of advice about what Disney would do with certain themes and with the look of my character, and I had to take all of that in. But I wrote the book, and it did not change. Nothing that I put in as far as names that I wanted to mention, people that I thought were important to my story, nothing was edited out. So I haven't found, if there is a line to be found with Disney and my editor, Laura, that it was too far. And now this is the thing. Sometimes I think before we write a story, we're already self-editing. And that is, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to tell my story. And then if I got pushback, then that's another story. But I didn't. So I'm happy that I put what I wrote, the story that I wanted to write. And then you worry about editing after.
Sure. Is it harder to find a publisher, harder to find an agent, harder to get work as a Black woman who's writing in this country as opposed to white authors? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'll say yes.
Yeah.
And I'll say yes because I've been a writer 15 or so years. I've taught, I've done other things, but a lot of people may know the history of middle grade, which is the 18 to 14 target audience. For a while, the stronghold, or just say white women, were writing Black characters. And it still happens, and there's nothing wrong with that if they can assess the characters and they're sensitive to the issues for whatever reason. But to find a Black characters written by Black women, it 10 years ago, that wasn't the norm. And so I do know that at one point when people wanted diverse books, that to open it up to diverse writers wasn't the first go-to. It was to say, hey, we already have majority white women writing, so let's just have them write Black characters. So, that's a whole nother conversation. So to be a Black writer, writing Black characters, and to write the story that I want to write, that's been a challenge, but I'm just hoping that the doors continue to open for us.
And the book is Love Like Sky. My guest is Leslie Youngblood. LeslieCYoungblood.com is her website. This is her debut novel, but as I said, she's been an award-winning writer for years before the publication of this novel. What's her next book? In our second half hour, we're going to get right back into the book, but what's next?
With Disney, I landed a 2-book deal, so mm-hmm. I do have a book in the works, which is a sequel to Love Like Sky. And the title, because this is how it happens, the title has not come yet. I have perhaps a working title, but, to say that I know this is the title enough to share, not yet. So, but I am working on it, and it is set, it follows the characters as they travel to Bogalusa, Louisiana, and go from there.
There is, it seems to me, mm-hmm. there is a real possibility that a book like this could be taught in classrooms in this country.
I'm hoping so.
About that?
Well, I know that I've been approached by several teachers now who are ordering it for next semester. So I do think that it will be taught.
Wow, that's...
I know one person that really is a fan of the book, a friend of mine, Takiya Graham. She teaches at the university level, and she plans to teach it at a college level. So I do think that says a lot. I think there are issues from elementary, the grade level to college level that the book can tackle.
Your biggest fan, Megan Mack, immediately asked, when will the sequel be released?
This time next year, I think it's on the same schedule, Love, Light, Sky, so I'm thinking November 6th or so, 2019.
Part of what I was thinking was, boy, is that too much, too quickly? Probably for an author to actually get a deal, no one's going to complain. You know, if you get a multi-book deal, you will find a way. You will fulfill those deadlines.
Well, I do think that it is writing the second book. You do have the blueprint. You know these characters. I know these characters well. So there are some challenges with just making sure that you're not so distracted by the outside work that comes with writing, the marketing, things like that. I do have a 5 a.m. writing schedule, and often I find myself doing this, doing that.
5 a.m.?
Oh, yeah, 5 a.m.
You're up at 5 a.m. to write?
I'm up before 5 a.m. to get ready to write at 5 a.m.
Wow.
5 a.m. Writers Club is what we call it on Twitter. You're welcome to join.
5 a.m. Writers Club. You're writing at home when you do that, I assume?
Writing at home.
With a big cup of coffee?
Huge. Humongous.
and you make yourself do that?
Yes.
And you write until when?
I don't. It's not even make myself. It's just something I do naturally now, and I absolutely love it. I usually write maybe until noon, depending on my schedule of the day. But that early morning is when I feel the most creative. I feel that I wake up, I want to jump into the characters. I want to see what they have to say for the day. And sometimes I just posted this quote by Maya Angelou that says, you work until your muse comes to you. Sometimes it comes, sometimes it doesn't, but you have to be working. And there's also a quote by, I think that's Picasso, that says, your inspiration comes, but it must find you working. You have to be at the table, you have to be at your desk, and you have to be doing something. Maybe it'll get edited out or thrown away, but you have to be in the process of writing for that inspiration to come.
Well, that is good advice for writers, for aspiring writers, for writers blocked writers.
I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in writer's
block? I do
block.
Not believe in writer's block.
How can you not believe in writer's block? You never have writer's block?
I've never had it. Because now keep in mind, I've written some things that I wouldn't show my worst enemy. I just wouldn't bring it to the light of day.
But you're still writing.
I'm still writing. So to me, that is what block means. I have nothing to say. Block means that I have nothing to write about, that there's nothing that I can put on the paper, and that's never the case.
See, I think sometimes block is just being distracted. By technology, have you checked your email in the last 90 seconds? You know, all the little things. Do I have any text messages? All the little things that can distract you, no?
Well, I don't think blocked and distracted are different. Often, I mean, sometimes I am distracted. Sometimes I do have to just turn off social media and concentrate on writing. But I think of blocked as I'm sitting at the computer, nothing's coming. I'm just blank. I don't feel that way. If I do, I'll just start, I'll change scenes. I'll work on another story. I'll do something just to keep that energy flowing. But I haven't had, and I'm not saying that to discount anyone that has had it. My personal experience, if I'm writing, if I'm there, even if I'm producing something that I know isn't the best, I'm writing and I'm not blocked.
All right, after our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about the characters in the book Love Like Sky. And we've talked about Georgie. We're going to talk about the other two girls, and we're going to talk about trauma. They've experienced trauma in different ways. One is a medical trauma for a 6-year-old. We'll mm-hmm. talk about that. And the 15-year-old has experienced her own loss and her own trauma that impacts her relationships. And anybody who's been a teenager can relate to these characters. Anyone who has lost someone can relate to this. I found the book remarkable, and I think producer Megan Mack and I both just agreed how much you read this book and you gravitate to the characters, you root for them, and I think you'll feel the same way. The book is called Love Like Sky. Our guest is author Leslie Youngblood, a Rochesterian whose book is in national stores, and she's right here in studio. So let's get that break, and we're going to drag producer Megan Mack in here, get her review as well.
Okay.
After our only break of the hour.
Thank you.
I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, in a piece for the National Review, writer Kevin Williamson says conservatives do not do well in America's cities, and they themselves are to blame for some of that. He says conservatives should spend more time in urban areas. We'll talk about how conservatives can improve their numbers in cities. Then in our second hour, when discussing resources for cancer patients, there's a population that sometimes falls through the cracks. We talk about the gaps in support Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guest, author Leslie Youngblood's new book, her debut novel is Love Like Sky, and it is in bookstores now across the country. And in fact, Leslie herself is going to be at the Pittsburgh Barnes & Noble today, 4 to 7?
Yes, 4 to 7.
Signing books?
Signing copies of Love Like Sky.
Beautiful book here. And when an author has, first of all, any book out, but especially your first book, you hope the reviewers will be kind. Well, you had quite an accolade right out of the gate from Kirkus. Tell us about that.
Kirkus named Love Like Sky one of the best family stories of 2018. So that was huge.
How did you feel when you heard that?
A starred review from Kirkus, I was over the moon with that. Because I don't really read reviews on the regular, regular reviews. My editor and friends, anyone concerned with my well-being mentally, said, don't do it.
It's probably good advice.
Don't read reviews, and I follow that. So the only reviews that I actually read are the ones that my editor sends. And when she says, we have a star, and I was like, wow. And so that out the gate, that was it was helpful for my confidence, for me to know the book is out there really in real time.
Yeah, I mean, Connections as a talk show, we are sent via mail, I don't know what the number is, producer Megan Mack, dozens of books a year, and we just cannot possibly do them all on the program. We could do a book a day, probably, if we wanted to. Mm-hmm. This one was such an easy yes. It was so easy.
Thank
you. You're local. It's so good. The book looks so good. So, Leslie, today at the Pittsburgh Barnes & Noble from 4 to 7.
Yes.
If you've got a young reader on your list or an adult on your list who loves to read, and you still got a need for December 25th, Love Like Sky is out there now. I want to ask producer Megan Mack to grab the microphone and just share her thoughts because she tore through this book. So, hi.
Hi, poor Leslie. I want to apologize to Leslie because I've been bugging her for months to come on the show.
No,
and she's
not
very busy.
At all.
So I'm glad you're here, Leslie.
Thank you, Megan.
And I will also share a funny story. When people do send books to us, they send one copy, and usually Evan takes the copy,
hold on.
Because you have to, you're hosting all the shows, and I tried to read them afterward, but this one I took, and I didn't even tell him we had it, so
true.
Now I have to apologize to Evan.
I did not even know. That's actually true.
Thank you.
I think, Leslie, I wanted to ask you, because I think for adults, especially those who don't have children, it's easy to write off a young adult novel and say, oh, that's a book for kids. It's not something that will appeal to me. And I was glued to every page. I found those characters so relatable. I learned a lot. I felt myself drawn into the story, really caring about what happened to them. So I know you mentioned before what's an appropriate age for a child to start reading a book like this, but have you been hearing from a lot of adults?
I hear from, honestly, adults now more than children, because since the book was just released November 6th, it has not arrived in classrooms, and because it was toward the end of the semester. So I've been hearing from the adults who've purchased it or who read early reviews or early advanced copies of the book. And I did hear this wonderful story from a former teacher who told me that after reading the book, she wanted to sort of not necessarily reconcile the relationship with her ex-husband to the point where at least they could be in the same room. And that's amazing when an adult tells you that, because from the family and from how those families work together, the fact that she says she couldn't stand her ex, and this book made her rethink that and understand that it's the other people that suffer, the children that suffer when parents, grandparents are just at odds. That was important.
And I know that you relate to these characters so well. You know what they're going to say. You love hearing from them, as you mentioned before. How do you get into the mind of an 11-year-old? You covered so many different things that G-Baby was feeling, whether it was the drama with her best friend Nikki and their sort of rival at school, to what was going on in her family and how she felt as a big and a little sister. How do you get into the mindset of Georgie?
Well, first, I read a lot, and I think that's important. So Creative Writing 101, to be a better writer, you have to be a better reader. You have to read a lot. And I do that. So I'm always, it's not only surrounding myself with kids that age, which I do at times in different school programs and such, and my own family, apparently. I was just surrounded by family of that age in Atlanta just a few days ago. But to stay in that mindset, I really just try to access the 11-year-old Leslie. Sometimes that helps. And I think that's just the most important. How do I think an 11-year-old relates? I either read, I either think, what was I thinking? I watch TV. I just soak in the world, and I think that's what all writers have to do.
And I know related to that, your relationship with your brother was really important to you. And I don't think anyone reading this book cannot think about siblings of their own. And how did you channel some of that part of your childhood into the book?
Well, you know, I grew up in a blended family. But so much, even though this is not autobiographical, I think, like as I said before, you know, blended families, the themes, the struggles are universal. And I have stepbrothers who I no longer say step. My stepdad, I no longer say stepdad. He's my dad. Those are my brothers. But our family did experience a loss of a tragic loss of my one of my younger brothers. And so even though I do not cover that in the book, I don't talk about that. What I do talk about is the love of siblings. And while I was grieving, because I think once you're grieving, you're always grieving a tragic loss. So I think what happened is that the love of my siblings is just the love for my brother, who's always watching us, and all of my siblings.
Hmm. Megan, I'm just going to steal the microphone back from you now, if that's okay, because you're giving me grief for stealing books when they come in first. You know.
Sorry, Evan.
I don't think that
give
was
fully. Give me one thing.
I gave you one thing, apparently. You took Love Like Sky first. No, I appreciate that. I think we both just appreciated the way this book draws characters that feel so real. Mm-hmm. And I thought Megan's question was a really good one. How you mm-hmm. create an 11-year-old, how you create a 6-year-old, how you create a 15-year-old. So let's talk about those characters if we could.
Okay.
So in this family, you have two sisters, 11 and 6 years old, and they would both love to get the affection and adoration of their 15-year-old stepsister, mm-hmm. and their new sister,
right,
Tangie. But again, Tangie's not interested. She doesn't want to be all buddy-buddy. She wants to do her thing. But she has experienced loss.
Right.
And that has impacted how she approaches this relationship. And so the way she has a bit of an icy facade mm-hmm. with her new sisters will change over time based on what happens to the 6-year-old, which we'll talk about in a moment. Did you think about letting the listeners know, the readers know right away? Or did you think about having them sort of wonder what Tangie went through, why she was that way, what kind of loss it was?
Well, I wanted them to know that the loss was important because we never, I guess I wanted that opportunity once again for someone who has suffered a loss to relate or to have an outlet. So I think her loss is another way that 15-year-olds who have suffered loss can talk about it. So it was important to me. I don't know if I thought about when was the appropriate time mm-hmm. to tell, because I don't plot. I don't.
You don't have like a big overarching structure.
No.
You don't. Okay.
I don't outline. And not saying there's anything wrong with people who do outline. I just have learned that someone called it, "I'm a pantser by the seat of your pants." I suppose that's the term. There's an outline, people who outline, and people who are by the seat of their pants. So I don't outline. I really just go into the story and I just write. So when the story says it's time to say, then that's when I say. Now keep in mind, things may change during the editing process, but All I remember is that Tangi wouldn't necessarily say immediately, this is why I'm like this. We have to understand that she's coping with it the best that she can.
I think your young readers in particular will learn a really good lesson from that, because mm-hmm. as the book opens, these interactions will make you think, you know, come on, Tangi, you know, don't be a jerk. You got these two younger girls. They think you're cool. They just want to look up to you. They want to, and you're shutting them out. And what you learn as the story goes on is that Tangi has a big heart, but she's been impacted by trauma
right.
and loss herself. And I think that's a lesson about not judging someone, because we're all going through something.
Right. We don't know what
we don't know what's. I mean, every person you meet in your life, and this is not my original thought. I mean, I've heard this a lot lately, but it's true.
That's true.
Is going through something, and it's easy in one brief interaction at a diner or at a drive-thru or on the street to think, boy, that person's a jerk. But you don't know what they're going through, and I think your young readers in particular will learn a great lesson through Tangi, but also. Trauma in particular is really rough on kids. Tell me your thoughts about why you wanted to incorporate a character who's had that kind of trauma.
Well, I wanted to incorporate that simply to give a voice to people who have experienced it and maybe not know how to deal with it. They can relate, say, wow, I feel that way, or this is what I would like to say. And hopefully an adult can read it and say, well, maybe this is why. And I also thought it was important that Tangi, we do find out that she is seeking help, that she does have someone to talk to about it. But at that point, the kids really, the stepsisters are not in tune with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just want her to be close to them. So I thought it was important just to give an outlet for someone to say, this is the way I feel, this is why I'm not connecting, and to be heard.
Then the six-year-old is someone we should explore briefly here. And I don't think it's giving too much away to say she becomes
ill,
very sick,
mm-hmm.
With a life-threatening
illness. Yes.
And that illness not only impacts her 11-year-old sister, but it impacts the relationship her 11-year-old sister and her 15-year-old stepsister have.
Right.
Can you describe that a little without giving too much away?
Well, it is a end for them to bond. You know, this dealing with someone who's ill, the hospital visits, it did throw Tangi because of her loss. Just the thought of a hospital to some is something that they can't take mentally. So that was a challenge for her to deal with, to know that one of her stepsisters was at the hospital. But I do think what I wanted to show is that this family comes together and rallies together when Peaches becomes ill. And that was important. And it also gave Tangi a way to open up and to show her softer side, I think. And that was really important for me.
How did you feel as a writer, knowing that you created these characters, but they become your characters, and you're writing about these moments that are emotional for your readers? How emotional for you when you're writing it?
Oh, it's always emotional. I can seldom read from the book without tearing up, because even though I created these characters, I think of them like real people. And I think really for a writer, that's the best position to be in. I don't necessarily even think of them like characters in a sense, because even though we mentioned the 6-year-old, the 15-year-old, the 11-year-old, we have, you know, a mom, a stepdad, the grandmother. We have a family. And I think when writers want to write what I call realistic fiction, they just have to be people watchers. They have to understand that places that you connect with humans, places you connect with humans, like I'm like an alien or something. But you have to just be in that mindset, mm-hmm. to be in tune to emotions. I cry watching TV. I'm just in tune with emotions, and I think that's so important to writing, to not write cardboard characters.
Well, and it's one thing to be in tune with emotions. It's mm-hmm. another to be able to translate that into really believable and good dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just say, I think your dialogue is excellent. And not that I'm some sort of arbiter of all things dialogue, but everybody knows when you pick up a book and you go, this dialogue is
doesn't
so bad.
Seem real.
It doesn't seem real. It takes me out of the story. It sounds ridiculous. Readers, tell me if I'm wrong here, but the worst dialogue writer I ever read was Michael Crichton. I just never understood how... I mean, go back and pick up Congo and tell me I'm wrong. But anyway, Timeline, the worst book ever. So there are books that just the dialogue doesn't work. And your dialogue is not only, I think, is it really compelling, it's believable. It has a lot of different ages woven into it. What are the pitfalls or your thoughts on writing good dialogue?
I'll be honest. Dialogue is, if a writer, and a writer should believe, for some reason, writers think that is egotistical to say, this is what I'm good at, but we have to. Dialogue is my strong suit. It is what I'm comfortable writing dialogue. I love listening to dialogue because I love listening to people talk. And I've been that way since I was a child. And I've been exposed to grown-ups talking, you know, in the South, when I was in earshot. So I love dialogue. And then I think in my grad school program, they said, hey, this is your thing. You write dialogue well. So I think that you just have to listen, you have to read a lot, and you just have to be in tune to dialogue. And how that comes across on the page, it just happens.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is for you, since it's pretty naturally a strength for you. You write it; it's pretty sort of snug. You don't have to go back and analyze that much. But do you go back and analyze and go, I'm not sure this works. This part I'm feeling a little stilted.
Well, it's the editing process. I get it down, and you write that horrible first draft, you know, because the only dialogue I believe that didn't undergo edits, of course, was that the dialogue that you read. That dialogue has not changed, maybe a word or two here or there. Everything else, I mean, has been edited. You read it, doesn't sound right, you go back. But the most important thing that I want to stress for writers, get the dialogue down, get it on the paper first, then start to hear it. Read it to yourself. Read it on the mic. Let someone else read it to you and hear it, you know. And that's my advice for to write dialogue well.
All right. And another question for writers then, because if you missed it earlier this hour, author Leslie Youngblood described writers as either outliners or pantsers, seat of their pantsers, as writers who are let sort of the story is. Obviously writing fiction, the story flow out of you without too much of an overarching idea on where it's going. At some point, do you know in your mind that Peaches, the six-year-old, has a life-threatening illness? I know how this is going to end up. I know where this is going. Maybe page by page, you don't have a full map on how you're getting there, but the big themes, did you know pretty early on where you wanted it to end up?
As far as big themes, I know, because if I'm writing a story about blended families and how they come together, then I know
that
they're going to come together in some shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
So that is my overarching theme. Everything else, you know, piece by piece, we'll put that together.
And see, this won't give it away. So this is just a question that doesn't have to have an answer that gives it away. Did you know if Peaches was going to survive or not the illness?
Did I know?
Because I won't say whether she survives or not, even though it's...
I went back and forth.
You did?
I did go back and forth a little bit on that.
Wow.
I did.
Wow.
I did. Now, keep in mind, going back and forth in your head is different from when it's on the paper.
Yeah, sure.
At that point, when I was committed on paper, I didn't. But in thinking of the story and thinking of, okay, you know, because it changes the story if either way it goes. So I did think about it when I thought about the illness, but once I was committed, I didn't look back.
There are certainly moments in the book that will be tough and emotional. There will be moments, and again, this doesn't give away and this doesn't answer the question we just raised, but there are moments at the end that will make you sort of stand up and cheer for the characters who have changed how they interact and what they do for each other. And it's beautiful story. The book is called Love Like Sky. It is out now. It's only been out for a month and a half. And author Leslie Youngblood is right here with us, proud Rochesterian. And,
yes.
And the book is national. It is in national stores. What's your goal for this book? If this goes the way you want it to, what happens? Is it a movie? I mean, like, honestly, when you read this, you go, this could be a movie. There's so much. This could be taught in classes. There's a lot that could happen with this.
You know, I don't have. It's not in a box. Mm-hmm. However that the story takes off is how it takes off, because you're asking me to put myself in a whole other anxiety if I say, oh, it should be a movie. I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do is focus on the next book and just hope that people continue to connect with Love Light Sky, that people, I don't want them to necessarily see past the cover. I want them to see this black girl on the cover, and I want them to pick it up and read the story. So it's not like I want them to pretend that they don't see color. See the color, love the color, understand that this is a universal story, and share it. That's what I want for these characters more so than anything. And after that, hey, if Disney says it's been optioned for a movie, Evan, I'm not going to say no thanks. I'm going to say bring it on. Let's do that. But I want to focus on the next book, and I want to focus on many books after that.
Where can people see you today? One more time.
Today, 4 to 7, Barnes & Noble, Pittsford. And I will be signing books and happy to meet readers. And from there, always on my website, LeslieCYoungblood.com, and Amazon, and BarnesandNoble.com.
And as she mentioned earlier, if you're the kind of reader who loves the independent bookstores, which is great, that's just sort of a case-by-case basis.
Yes.
You may find them at some independent bookstores, too, if that's your preference. I hope you have a great experience at Barnes & Noble. And
Thank you.
The book is just a gorgeous book. It's got a great cover, Love Like Sky. Have a great Christmas season. Thank you for coming
in. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Evan, for having me. I really, really appreciate this.
Well,
thank you, Rochester. Love you.
You got it. And by the way, you're going to hear Leslie Youngblood on New Year's Eve when Rochester's Favorite Books is our annual show. And in this case, we ask prominent people around our community to share their favorite read of the year, about 5 minutes or less. And I see that you brought 3, so she failed the assignment to talk about 1. You can hear her then on New Year's Eve. That's Leslie Youngblood. The engineer of connections is Rob Braden. Producer Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.